It is exciting. It is incredibly fulfilling. It should inspire us to do more because we haven't even begun to reach our collective potential to be a successful and resilient city, prosperous, healthy, educated, and equitable, and also very sustainable. So I'm pleased to introduce Director Anderson, who will work with the Director of Sustainability, Mr. Armstrong, to take us through the report.
Thank you. Susan Anderson, Director of Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. So this is our second year reporting on the Climate Action Plan, and I'm going to provide a brief overview of how we've done meeting our goals, and then Michael will talk you through some of the actions that the city, the county, individual businesses, and residents have taken to get us there. So the big news, as Mayor Adams mentioned, is that carbon emissions per person are actually down 26%. And that's just like a little fact out there that doesn't seem like much, but no other place that we know of is really doing this kind of work and has been the successful. Total emissions are down by 6%. The base year we use for comparison is 1990, and that's sort of the international standard. So total emissions in Portland, while our population has been increasing, are down 6%. The rest of the U.S. is up about 12% on average. So we're definitely heading in a different direction. The plan, as you can see, the perspective of our total goals, however, we have a long way to go. And our goal is to cut emissions by 80% by 2050 with an interim goal of 40%. So we're heading in the right direction, but we have a long way to go. One of the things we did this time was to break down the emissions by sector to really try to understand where did the savings come from, because that's the first question people often ask us, especially in the business sector where people are saying, well, the economy's been kind of down, and so that's why emissions have gone down. The first couple bars there are focused on the residential sector. The first bar shows that the population has increased 26% between 1990 and 2010. But energy use has actually declined by 9% per person. And that's from energy efficiency in homes, in lighting, in the refrigerators we buy, the windows we buy. And what's interesting from the perspective, at least from my perspective, is that very few people who took these energy efficiency measures in their homes did it at all because they cared about climate change, because about global warming. They did it because it saved them money in their home, because it was a good value, or it made their home more comfortable or more valuable. So we need to remember that we're not going to get to this goal through altruism. We're going to get to this goal by using the right kind of price signals, by using common sense in terms of how much things cost. Also important in this graph is the bar that says that talks about carbon intensity, and that's the last bar on the right. It fell by 18%. Carbon intensity is a term that means that's the amount of carbon that's emitted by the fuels that we use to generate the power that we burn to heat our homes, for example. So if you did a long list of the carbon intensity, you'd have coal up at the top going down to wind and solar at the bottom. So how much actual carbon emissions come out of the fuel. So this has shifted as we've shifted to more renewable fuels and to natural gas. So savings in the business sector is the next set of graphs. We compare job growth alongside energy use. Since 1990, the number of jobs in Portland has increased by 12%, but energy use per job has decreased by 13%. Now, a small part of that is due to the shift from industrial businesses to commercial jobs, but overall, this is from companies who have been investing in energy efficiency, energy efficient buildings, lighting, heating, more efficient pumping, processing, all of those things. And again, not because necessarily the companies had a huge goal to stop global warming. They did this because it made sense for their company from a financial point of view. The next slide shows transportation energy use. It's also down, more walking, transit, bikes, more efficient cars. And then the final set of bars talks about waste disposal. Since 1990, we've tripled our recycling rate here in Portland. And then also when the trash that does go to the landfill goes there, it generates methane. Methane is a very potent greenhouse gas. But now much of that methane, most of it, is captured, either burnt or it is used to generate electricity. And finally, the total amount, the 6%, you can see that about half of this came from the business sector, about 20% from residents, and the rest from transportation and solid waste. So this slide kind of pulls it all together. This is the one I show when I go talking about what we're doing in Portland to other cities. The bar, the line, I guess it's yellow in the graph there. You can see it's heading down. It's going in a very different direction than the rest of the U.S., and this is really our story. We've been able to do this by, at the same time, growing jobs and at the same time, you know, helping our environment and really creating a whole new industry. Finally, although that first little...
Just go back to the previous slide, please.
Sure.
I'm assuming that the overall United States dip from 7 to 9 is to do with the recession and
yes.
People just not going to work, so therefore not driving?
Is that Well, it's a little bit of that, but predominantly it's about industry. So if we're not manufacturing, we're not using a lot of, you know, a lot of fuel.
And so, there's a start to go back up again.
Right. So as we manufacture more goods, as we you know, we then generate and need to use more power.
Thank you.
For example. So if you just look at the short part, it looks really good. If you look in the long run, we've got a long way to go. excuse me. You know, one of the most interesting things out of this is that because we've built demand for these sustainable products and technologies and services over the past couple decades, we've grown a clean tech industry here. Companies that are selling really these services and these technologies to the rest of the world. And so by doing the right thing here, we've actually provided a huge amount of demand for companies to then be able to prosper and grow. So again, we're heading in the right direction. We've got a long way to go. Other cities around the world look to us for leadership, and they look to see how we have done this and at the same time grown jobs. I did have one little thought that I had while I was listening to the last presentation about FPDR, and that's that there's a huge pile of money sitting there that we invest somewhere. And so I'd just like to, as we come back in the next year with our next, you know, round of actions we want to take in the Climate Action Plan, and we're looking for how do we fund the upfront costs of a lot of these things that do pay back over time, we may want to look at a part of that loan or a part of that fund as a potential loan fund for public facilities to improve their energy efficiency or to improve renewable resources. So I thought I'd throw that out there now. Thanks. Michael will now talk about some of the things that have been going on by individual residents and businesses in the community.
Thanks, Susan. So I'm Michael Armstrong. I work for the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. There are two really important pieces to this. One is the numbers and what are we learning from the trends over time, and that's how we're going to hit our goals. The second piece is the actions that the city and the county have laid out for themselves and holding ourselves accountable for how we're doing and what seems to be working and where we still need effort. So I want to talk quickly through some of the highlights from the action areas. And I want to start with, in our just staff assessment of how things are going, there are on the order of 100 actions in the climate plan. We feel really good about two-thirds of them. So about 70%, they're either already completed or we believe they're on track to be done by the third year of the three-year period. Another quarter are running into obstacles of one sort or another. We're working on those. We'll see how we can do. And then there's a smaller handful that we haven't yet started. We'll obviously see what we can do later this year. But on balance, a lot of work is underway. Much of it is going well. And there's certainly more that we need to be doing. Going through a couple of the highlights. Buildings and energy, this is the source of 40% of all of our greenhouse gas emissions. There's been an enormous amount of work that's gone on. Brian Detman from Clean Energy Works Oregon will join us in a few minutes and tell you a little more about Clean Energy Works, which is really a pioneering program nationally in getting individual single-family homes retrofit, making them more comfortable, more affordable. It's a great success that continues to build momentum. We've also seen a lot of success around solar energy. The climate plan set a goal of 10 megawatts of installed capacity by the end of 3 years. After 2 years, we were at about 15 megawatts. So we've far eclipsed that goal. And this is a wonderful set of efforts that include neighborhood initiatives like Solarize. It includes big solar installations by businesses. It includes installations by city bureaus, the Water Bureau. It includes work by the county. So this is really a nice collective effort that's far exceeding our solar goals. We've also done a lot of work around district systems, and there's a district energy system coming together in the Rose Quarter that is really exciting. It's pioneering for Portland, and it's helping us bring new technologies and new players to the table to get benefits that are both economic and environmental out of this. We've done quite a bit of work around commercial buildings. There's more to be done, and that's something that we've teed up for more work this current year. So we hope to be back with a proposal before long on that. In terms of urban form and mobility, this is where we need to continue to get our intersection of land use planning and transportation right. So much of this success in the long run is about having thriving, walkable communities that are connected to one another by lots of transportation options. A lot of this has come through the Portland plan process. Again, lots of community involvement, lots of business districts see this as a key solution. It's fundamental to our success on climate change, and there's a lot of progress in place. On a policy front, we need to make sure we get that carried out through the comprehensive plan, through neighborhood efforts as well. One of the biggest challenges, as you all know, that we continue to face is around transportation funding. This is an issue both for the new investments that we need to make as well as for ongoing maintenance. We have increasing things like electric vehicles, which are really promising from a carbon emissions perspective. They do not help the way we currently fund our transportation system, and we need to wrestle with that and get through that. There are now, I think it's 300 Nissan Leafs on the road in the Portland area. We're still on track by the end of this year to have 1,000 charging stations. Electric vehicles are here. They are growing. That's exciting, and we need to engage and get ahead of that.
1,000 stations in the Portland, Multnomah County area?
In the region. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. One of the other efforts going on regionally is Metro's work around climate smart communities, where the legislature essentially asked them to develop scenarios to hit some greenhouse gas goals from transportation. So, you know, big, complex policy initiative. The city's participating actively, as are other jurisdictions. That's going to be an important piece going forward. We cannot do this alone. The county's a great partner. We need to establish that same level of partnership with surrounding jurisdictions. In terms of solid waste, so consumption, dealing with recycling, some nice progress in the last year, public place recycling along Transit Mall downtown. We're collecting about 1,000 pounds of recyclables every week. More than that, we know get harvested, get pulled out, which is helpful. We've also had the residential food scrap collection program in place for about 5 months now. Numbers, you know, continue to come in terms of overall tonnage. We've now collected about 30,000 tons of yard waste and food scraps combined. We're still evaluating, and so we'll come back to you with more details on that as we get additional information. But so far, the results are really consistent with what we saw on the pilot project, which is it's encouraging. We think it's working quite well. We already have about 900 businesses that do commercial composting. We want to expand that over the year ahead to make sure that we're getting the biggest sources of food scraps, make sure those are getting out of the landfill and into beneficial use. So that's one of the efforts that we'll be working on later this year. In terms of urban forestry and natural systems, you know, here's where across the city, the Water Bureau, parks, BES, you know, they're really good efforts that are, you know, implementing all manner of programs around watershed stewardship, around tree planting, making sure that we're doing our best on invasive species, keep the urban forest healthy, harmonizing and streamlining efforts around trees through the Tree Code project. And then likewise, a lot of this lands in the Healthy Connected City strategy, and we need to make sure it feeds into other plans and we tie them together effectively. So strong work here. This is really important for the work around climate adaptation that I'll talk about in a second. A lot of work as well around food and agriculture. Later this month, we'll have a food zoning code project to the Planning and Sustainability Commission, and then soon thereafter, presumably, we'll bring that to City Council for your consideration, trying to identify and address any barriers in the zoning code to food distribution and production in the city. There's also been really good work that Parks has done in partnership with others around adding urban community garden plots, some of them through the Parks program, some of them in partnership with other agencies, which is a really powerful way of getting it done. The county has done really good work on food over the last couple of years as well. The Multnomah Food Action Plan is a powerful bringing together of partners around this, so we continue to work with them. Later this year, we'll also bring to you for your consideration goals around the food system for Portland so that we're able to measure our progress over time able to address it with things like the zoning code project, some purchasing guidelines. We have a number of efforts here around community engagement. I think Susan makes a really good point earlier and consistently that a lot of people do the kinds of things that reduce carbon emissions for other reasons. They're motivated by any number of things from finances to community livability to, you know, having trees in their neighborhood. Some people are looking for information about climate change, and so we try to offer it to those who do want that. By way of example, the city's climate action website got about 40,000 hits last year. So there's clearly some appetite for getting information about this, and we want to serve those who do. Likewise, the Rethink program works with individual community organizations that want to bring their members together to engage around both information, tap into resources, and actually do community projects that help to reduce carbon emissions while advancing their goals. I mentioned climate adaptation earlier. One piece of the climate plan directs the city and county to put together a climate change preparation plan. You know, the climate is already changing. We are seeing the changes. They're going to be more and broader. And so a lot of work has happened over the last year to begin to dive into the technical side of this. We've got working groups organized around hard infrastructure, around natural resources and green systems, and also around health and human services. And so this is, again, spanning the city and county. So we're kind of corralling all of this and beginning to assemble it, and that's something we'll have back to you later this calendar year for your consideration. It's both satisfying to have so many different perspectives engaged on this project, and it's in some ways we are not as vulnerable as a lot of places, and we are incredibly fortunate for that. There are also things we absolutely need to be sure we're doing, and so we think this will position us to understand our vulnerabilities and what we do need to do about it. The companion resolution to this, I think it's 356, is an illustration of this kind of regional collaboration around climate adaptation. It's the Willamette Valley Compact, which is an effort that's been sort of initiated by the University of Oregon. They're looking for jurisdictions throughout the Willamette Valley, essentially to partner and recognize the ways in which climate change is going to result in changes that affect all of us. And we're going to be a lot more successful if we respond to those and are informed by one another than if we do it individually. And so we can talk more about that if that's helpful. It's a good opportunity to work with our fellow jurisdictions around these issues. And so finally, in terms of local government operations, the plan identifies a number of specifics. It's satisfying to look back at the long list of energy efficiency projects that have happened across the city over many years now and increasing in recent years. So efficiency projects, but also renewable energy at the wastewater treatment plant, at the Water Bureau, efficiency projects at community centers, in other city-owned buildings, in maintenance garage. Those together total over $5 million in annual savings that we are not paying in utility bills. So these are things, again, they deliver good benefits from a carbon perspective. They deliver good financial benefits as well. We're digging in on the waste recovery side as well. The numbers you see are for city operations, and it's, you know, sort of complicated to figure out exactly what to count. If you count everything the city does, our recycling rate is above 70%. We certainly still have opportunities in many of our operations, especially the ones that engage with the public, where it's always hard to set up a system for people who only participate in it kind of in passing. So we'll continue to work on that. So at this point, we're happy to take questions. We also have two speakers from Portland General Electric and Clean Energy Works Oregon that we'd like to bring up to flesh out our presentation.
Mayor, if I could ask one question.
Yep.
I occasionally take the Morrison Bridge to get to work, and I approach it from the west. And I've noticed that there's been a lot of changes in the area around the access point from the east. And included in that is small bioswales, areas with grass and trees, and then just a complete makeover of the built environment there. And I wonder, is that that I guess is an example of how our green infrastructure has just become institutionalized. But you've got the streetcar there, you've got the new bridge, and you've got street. So is that an example of different pots of money being available to drive green infrastructure? Because it's both visually beautiful, but it also looks like it's doing something important with stormwater runoff. And I'm just curious how that came about.
Yes and yes. Okay. Is the short answer the our requirements for construction over a certain value in the right of way include the treatment of stormwater and the east side. Commissioner Saltzman knows the details even better than I. The east side of the river is a priority for us. Tabor to the river. The streetcar goes through a portion of the Tabor to the river project. Really is to try to save money by not having to dig a perfectly good but undersized pipes to avoid that by getting more of the stormwater in this combined part of sewer system, to get more of the stormwater to go directly in the ground, that then has the added benefit of bringing cool, cold water up from below for the Willamette River.
Well, I just want to say, I mean, what it's done is it's created almost like a mini park.
Mm-hmm.
It's created a visually attractive green space, and then there's embedded in it some of the green infrastructure to obviously route the water and to use it to both maintain it and take things off the streets. I mean, so it's hitting whatever 3, 4, 5 goals at once, and it's just also beautiful. And it's like we have a new park there. So,
I think one of the things that's going to happen more and more is that as sustainability is not just some little office over in the corner over there, it's really kind of been integrated so that every one of your bureaus has people in it that are thinking about this all the time, about how to save money, about how to green up, about how to create jobs at the same time. I think we're going to see a whole lot more of this because it's become everybody's job instead of just one little department kind of over in the corner.
Thank you, and congratulations.
Thank you all. All right.
If we could bring up Dean Funk from Portland General Electric and Brian Detman from Clean Energy Works Oregon.
Mr. Funk, Mr. Detman, welcome. Welcome back.
Yes, I'll go. Good morning, Mayor Adams, Commissioners, Dean Funk, Manager of Local Government Affairs for PG. As I prepare to comment today, the second paragraph, the overview from the plan jumped out. I mean, it reads, no single action or single entity, public, private, nonprofit, or individual, is responsible for these accomplishments. Instead, they are the result of many people, businesses, organizations taking action every day. I think that's a very good summary of the plan. That's the place that we live in. That's a tribute to the people that we serve, both PG and the city. And, you know, PG, we take great pride in our perennial ranking as either the first or second highest penetration of renewable power in the United States, with Portland actually 5% higher than the other areas that we serve. And that's really, in a way, more of a reflection of our customers. We just provide a program for them to take action. That's the purpose of the local climate action plan. It's no surprise that 20 years down the road, Portland is nationally, if not internationally, lauded for the reduction that you just heard about before in carbon emissions since we took measure in 1990. It took leadership to set a course that led us to the enviable spot in 2012. And on behalf of PG, I want to congratulate the city and all the previous councils who moved that plan into action. A special tribute to the relentless Susan Anderson and the irrepressible Michael Armstrong, who it seems to me, since I've been at PG for more than 20 years, have been shepherding the plan since its onset. I don't know if that's accurate, but I'll bet it's pretty close. I also want to thank them and Mayor Adams in particular for their support on our Boardman 2020 closure plan. It will be a huge step forward to close ahead of schedule what is probably Oregon's largest greenhouse gas emitter. And you saw a little presentation on carbon intensity, so that comes clear. But I want to make a point here. PG made an economic, social, and environmental decision to close Boardman. It was not a decision to reduce carbon emissions, though that was a contributing factor. That's what's exciting about the thinking that is evident in the local climate action plan and the great challenge going forward. I was noting that how the precipitous drop from now to 50 years later, and that implies a big challenge. The action plan makes explicit reference to the importance of growing jobs and strengthening the economy while working to reduce carbon emissions. The gentleman next to me, I understand, works for the Clean Energy Works program, and it's a fine example of utilities working together with the city to help homeowners be more energy efficient while creating jobs and reducing emissions. One thing that's happening today is I was actually the junior varsity. They actually wanted Jim Pyre or Dave Robertson to speak, and they, as it happens, are out with local with IBEW Local 48 doing some sort of ribbon cutting on fast charging stations for the fast charging electric vehicles. And that creates a lot of jobs for Local 48, and that's why there's a big event out on our airport way as we speak right now. The relationship between the city and PG is the best I've seen in more than 20 years at PG, and I've seen some real lows, believe me. Each of our organizations brings great expertise in technology and discipline in economics to the table. The opportunity to learn from each other going forward is the asset that we bring together. On some of the finer points and actions going forward, I would expect we are going to have some disagreements. But we should remember that we are both going in the same direction. Of that, we can be sure. Our mutual customers expect that from us. Certainly, our focus is on buildings and energy section of the plan, but it was notable to me how many areas PG touches, sometimes intentionally, sometimes not. From urban forestry, encouraging alternative transportation, severe weather preparations, which we are working on intensively ourselves, health and wellness, PG either has a program for employees, supports organizations that focus on healthy communities, or promotes community engagement through our communications channels and our sponsorships. The progress on the Climate Action Plan is remarkable, and on behalf of PG, I salute the great work that has been done by this generation for future generations. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Funk, I want to thank you personally for your continuous involvement in making sure that PGE is well represented in all of our, not only all of our partnership projects, but all the charitable work that the company does in the community, helping us in public-private partnerships on a variety of fronts. Thank you for your personal involvement in that, and thanks to the company, a great Portland-based company that has helped us get everything, as you mentioned, from Clean Energy Works off the ground. In fact, it wouldn't have happened without the participation of your company. To all the other conservation efforts, the solar efforts that we heard a little bit about as part of the climate action goals. And one of the very few, if not the only utility in the United States in recent times that has voluntarily closed down a coal plant. You didn't have to, you chose to, and I just want you to know how much I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, members of council, Mayor Adams. I'm Brian Detman. Director of Partnerships at Clean Energy Works, also the JV squad to some extent with members of our team involved with a visit from the Department of Energy. I want to thank the mayor for his leadership and the council for their support in creating Clean Energy Works and securing the federal funds to help us create jobs and reduce carbon. Clean Energy Works, I believe, as you know, is a nonprofit organization that helps citizens make energy efficiency improvements to their homes. We connect them with qualified contractors, provide quality assurance, and also throughout the project hook them up with local lenders like Umpqua Bank. More than 1,000 Portland homeowners are enjoying more comfortable homes, lower energy bills, and reduced carbon footprints. Most homes are saving around 30% energy savings. And we have a 95% customer satisfaction rate in our service to customers. And as citizens sign up for these home upgrades, jobs are created. We've created more than 140 direct construction jobs since the pilot started in late 2009. And that was based, again, on your authorization. These jobs cover multiple trades, offer career pathways, and enable access for historically disadvantaged populations and economically challenged populations, people of color, women. And this commitment to creating an inclusive economy is a direct result of the leadership represented here. 55% of the work hours have been performed by women and minorities. And one worker that I'd like to share a little bit about, whose name is Albert, is a person who was formerly homeless. He began working for a Clean Energy Works contractor a couple of years ago, and now he is fully employed. He's also been awarded a scholarship through a partnership we have with Work Systems to enable him to get additional certification and become a crew lead. And Again, he's making contributions to the community. He's also African American, and that's important because, as we see in this home performance industry, that the change, there's a changing face, a more inclusive workplace, and a changing face in this space. There are many other stories like Albert's, people who are making a difference in the community, making a difference for their families, and I'm excited to have talked to many of them, and we're excited to continue working with them. We've created $17 million in economic activity, mostly revenue to small business contractors. 18%, or about $3 million of that, is to women and minority-owned firms. And we have a pipeline of more than $8 million of business and economic activity to be generated in 2012 alone. We also create multiplier effects throughout the local economy. We're promoting the sales of Oregon-based products like Indo Windows, a company based right on Interstate Avenue in North Portland. We have also enjoyed the support of PDC, and we appreciate that. We are beginning to see the real estate community is recognizing the value of energy efficiency improvements. In fact, one of your predecessors, Mike Lindberg, recently completed his Clean Energy Works project.
Yeah. Mr. CO2, and dragging his feet. No, I'm teasing. Congratulations.
That's right, yeah, and he noted that
frees up staff to move to Commissioner Leonard's project.
Yeah, oh, really. Good.
We're gearing up for that mansion.
Just to find a house.
Yeah. I have not. I to be fair to Mike, I have not done the Clean Energy Works. I've done the audit, so I know what I have to do. But I haven't done the actual, pulled the trigger on the actual retrofit yet.
Yourself.
Well, we'll have our customer service call you.
DIY. Can you imagine what a disaster that would be?
Right. Yeah. Don't forget the permits.
Yeah. Oh, permits.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Good. In Mike Lindbergh's case, his appraiser took a picture of his Clean Energy Works invoice and raised the value of his home accordingly. So we're starting to see examples
really
like that on the real estate front. Looking forward, this sector will continue to grow as recognition of the value of these improvements increases. And to end, we're proud to be a partner to the city and multiple stakeholders in the region and look forward to continuing to prove that smart public investments do create jobs, they spur economic activity, and help to minimize climate impacts. Thank you.
Thank you both very much. Really appreciate it. I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
It's a motion to – is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to accept the report. Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion?
Fish?
There was an answer.
Thank you, Susan and Michael, for your outstanding presentation. And outside of this more formal setting, thank you for the partnership that we enjoy in all my bureaus and other city bureaus with your team. I think Susan hit the nail on the head when she said that what we've done is institutionalized some of these sustainable practices and values in everything we do. I want to just celebrate a few of the things that that are in your report that I think reflect that. You highlight greenways and the value of greenways, and from North Portland Greenway to Sullivan's Gulch to planning for South Waterfront and expanding the 40-mile loop, all around the city, neighborhoods are planning new or extended greenways. And we're going to be a better city for it. There's a section about the tree code. The council is going to be taking up for some time the implementation phase, and it's complicated. But I love the fact in the report that in 2011, 7,000 trees were planted. And those were largely planted by our nonprofit partners with volunteers. And so Friends of Trees and groups like that go around our neighborhoods, do community tree plantings, and then leave little signs to remind us that they were there. So fabulous. There's some references to removing invasive species and the various organizations that do that, from including No Ivy League. And again, nonprofit partners and lots of volunteers helping us do this work, a great community effort. I'm very proud of the fact that this council last year voted to support the acquisition of the Riverview Natural Area, adding another historic piece of the West Side Jewels that help us have clean air and clean water. And I think that was a historic investment. In Outer Southeast, the continued focus on Zenger Farm and Leach Botanical and all the green infrastructure that's going in there is bringing these values to parts of the community that have been underserved. And then in the built environment, it's now just a matter of course. In fact, I can almost anticipate Commissioner Saltzman's question every time we bring any housing development forward. It's what will be the LEED designation? We set the bar, I think, as a community very high with Bug Clark Commons because it's LEED Platinum. But we are incorporating the highest LEED standards in everything we do, and this fall we'll open Gray's Landing in South Waterfront that also meets very high standards. So this work has been embedded in everything we do across bureaus, and it happens because of very intentional work that you do and the leadership of the mayor and the fact that there's buy-in on the council and all the directors. And we have a community that supports our work. So thank you for your update and congratulations for the work. And we look forward for the many years ahead to be your partners in this very important enterprise. Bye.
Saltzman.
Well, thank you for the very impressive report. It's good to see a lot of things happening and some tangible results associated with that, with the reduction in carbon emissions per capita. And that's very impressive. And so keep up the good work and appreciate all the partners, too. I wanted to acknowledge Multnomah County as a partner. I know their sustainability director was here earlier and apparently had to leave, but appreciate the partnership between the county and the city on this work. So, aye.
Leonard?
Thank you. Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you for all of your good work. And obviously, we still need to do more, so I very much appreciate your ongoing efforts. Aye.
Adams?
Great work. To the Planning and Sustainability Commissioner, thanks as well. We have the best Planning and Sustainability Bureau, local bureau, local department in the entire United States. And we have a fantastic City Council who's dedicated to making sometimes risky but smart risks that pay off in innovation and keep us at the cutting edge of innovation. And I want to thank the City Council for their efforts and my team in the Mayor's Office, Lisa Libby, Rehana Ansari, and Jana Pappas for all their great work as well. Aye. So approved. Uh-oh. So approved. All right. If the Council would allow me, I just want to deal with, because I have to leave with the item that I pulled, which is a emergency ordinance to amend outside legal services.
The other resolution on this item.
Oh, sorry. Call the vote.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. So approved. Can you please again read the title for item number 367?
367, authorize the City Attorney's Office to amend outside legal service agreement with Littler Mendelson PC.
So I wanted to pull this from the consent agenda just to note that we still have I believe three additional grievances that are coming before an arbitrator. And so this allows us to continue with the same legal services that we did before on the fresh hour item within the, it all stems from the same police interaction. So that's what this is, but I wanted to pull it from the consent agenda so that people knew what it was. Jim Bundyke is here to answer any questions. Does anyone wish to testify on this matter? Carly, can you please call the vote on the emergency ordinance?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you for taking the time to explain it. Aye.
Adams?
Aye. So approved. I'll turn it over to President
Fish. Thank you, Mayor Adams. Carla, would you please read the next time certain?
Item 357. Authorize an allocation of $1.8 million of community development block grant funds to Home Forward to support the development of Stevens Creek Crossing.
Thank you, Mayor Adams and colleagues. I'd like to invite Portland Housing Bureau Director Tracy Manning, Neighborhood House Executive Director Rick Nitti, and Executive Director of Home Forward Steve Rudman forward. And I'm going to introduce Tracy in one moment, and I just want to tee this up. Today, we are seeking your approval to make a $1.8 million investment in the revitalization of public housing in Hillsdale, formerly known as Hillsdale Terrace and now known as Stevens Creek Crossing. In 2009, the council authorized up to $5 million of investment in this exciting development as part of an application which Home Forward, then known as the Housing Authority of Portland, submitted to the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development for what would be their third, I believe, Steve, Hope 6 revitalization grant. Hope 6 is a competitive program, and we compete against cities across the country. And the fact that we have been successful three times, I think, says a lot about the ability of Home Forward to deliver on the promise of revitalizing aging a stock of public housing. What makes this for me as the housing commissioner especially exciting is that because of the success that Home Forward has had identifying other funding sources for this project, we are only asking for authority to invest $1.8 million. So substantially less than the authority the council previously granted us. Second, it is yet another example of where our partnership with another community organization and modest investment helps leverage something great. And Steve will talk to us a little bit about the full amount of the grant and what it allows Home Forward to do. But the third element here that I think needs to be acknowledged is that it is our conviction as a council and as a community that struggling families that are priced out of our market, our housing market, should have choices about where they live. They should have the choice of living in safe housing, safe and decent housing in Cully. And that's one of the reasons we invest in our trusted partner, Hacienda. They should be able to experience the dream of home ownership in Lentz, which is why we invest and support our partner, Habitat for Humanity. They should be able to be in the downtown corridor, accessible to great parks and Portland Public Schools' newest school, and that's the Ramona on the edge of the River District. And they should be able to live in Hillside, which is one of the great neighborhoods and communities in our city that has a robust and rich level of services and amenities, high-performing schools, parks, and the kinds of things that any family would want when making a decision where to live. It is our conviction that families priced out of our market should have choice, whether that's the River District, Cully, Lentz, or Hillside. We have a role to play.
Hillsdale. Next to Hillside.
Oh, yeah, I was wondering.
Hillsdale.
Are we in Portland
here?
I had to move into Hillside area.
There is a Hillside area.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
With, very expensive area.
Of course, with two commissioners from Southwest Portland.
Hillsdale in Portland, Oregon.
I had, thank you, Commissioner Leonard, and perhaps later you could take me on a drive and show me some of these sites.
Show you where Hillsdale is. My neighborhood. I'll show you.
Who wrote these talking points in Hillsdale? And our belief is that regardless of your income, families should have those choices. And so today I'm very pleased to come back before you to ask for your authority to make this investment. Excuse me. And I would like to introduce our distinguished director, Tracy Manning.
Thank you, Commissioner, City Council. Thanks for having us. Be brief and turn it over to our partners. This is a little bit of a sneak preview. Of our budget presentation later, and talking about how City of Portland partners with other jurisdictions to get the good work done that everybody needs done, sort of regardless of what color the money is. So PHB is proud to partner in Stevens Creek Crossing. We'll be investing or requesting your permission to invest $1.8 million to support 122 new family homes. Says here on my talking points in the Hillsdale neighborhood of Portland.
Thank you for getting that right.
Well, it's actually in Multnomah.
Well, there you go. We're going to stop with all geographic references.
Well, yeah, if you look at the map in here, the current Hillsdale Terrace is in Hillsdale, but the new location is actually in Multnomah.
It's in walking distance to the Willamette River.
I just want to be clear. We've just,
now I'm native. I can do this.
We've just confirmed that it is actually still located in the Pacific Northwest. So I think just to make
sure our GPS tracking.
Just in case there's been some confusion.
Well, I don't know. They're still checking.
Pay no attention to him, by the way. He's
levity is welcome.
Thank you.
So yes. Love Home Forward, I think that's where I was at. So working together to make great things happen in this neighborhood. So the other thing I'd note is that this investment reflects our number one strategic priority, which is investing in long-term affordability for our hardworking families. So we're fortunate to have a strong partner in Home Forward. I'd also like to acknowledge my hardworking staff, Assistant Housing Director Jacob Fox, who has helped us shepherd this through. And without any further ado.
Before I introduce Steve Rudman, I'd like to acknowledge that Harriet Cormack, the new chair of Home Forward, is with us. Harriet, thank you for once again being with us. And Harriet played an absolutely essential role in the development and success of Bud Clark Commons. And we thank you for all the good work you did there as well. Steve?
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. Commissioners, good morning. Great to be here. It's actually the Multnomah neighborhood. It's very close to the border of Hillsdale, so it's both neighborhoods we've been working with, and it is in Southwest Portland. So that's great. Just a couple of things. Nick just introduced Harriet, who also
move the mic.
Yeah, who also co-chaired the Community Advisory Committee for this redevelopment. And Rick Nitty from Neighborhood House was also on that, as well as many neighbors and residents. Mike Andrews, who is our Development Community Revitalization Director, has really been stewarding this development, is here also to answer questions. A couple quick things following up on Commissioner Fish. When Nick actually was a Housing Authority of Portland then commissioner in late 1999-2000, the Housing Authority of Portland identified three properties, family properties, mm-hmm. that had the greatest capital needs and in great need of revitalization. They were isolated physically and also socially and economically from the surrounding communities. And they, of course, were Columbia Villa. We started with and were successful with a Hope 6 redevelopment grant in 2001. It's now New Columbia. Iris Court in 2005, which is now Humboldt Gardens. And we were really fortunate to see Hillsdale Terrace become very soon Stevens Creek Crossing. And indeed, this is the last year the Hope 6 program is eliminated from the federal budget. We were very fortunate to be successful in the last round of grants, and in no small part to the commitment the city made in our application. And we really sincere thanks. The financial support in all these endeavors from the city has been great, as well as the staff support from numerous city bureaus. Just to be clear that this is more than a housing development. And all the Hope Sixes really are an opportunity to kind of look at improving the lives of residents who live there, connecting better to the surrounding neighborhoods, and increasing self-sufficiency and for work-focused households. And we have a very huge focus on children and their well-being. I believe you have in front of you some handouts with some renderings and our newsletter. But we are on schedule. Everyone who did live informally Hillsdale Terrace has been successfully relocated. In February, we finished. Where our design and construction folks have been busy finalizing plans, working with the cities. We're now looking at permitting. We anticipate the demolition of to be complete by August of this year, framing to begin in September. And we believe that families will move back no later than February of 2014. The other piece, though, it's in terms of this community in particular in Southwest Portland, as we look at the needs of lower-income families, households throughout the city and the region, it is a great neighborhood. The inner Southwest, mm-hmm. it's very close to downtown, to transportation, great educational opportunities at all levels, and it's just tremendous. We think it's so important that we're able to provide opportunities for folks throughout the entire city. And with this strong focus on economic self-sufficiency and youth success, And family wellness is also a big piece working with the county. We will see dramatically improved living conditions. If you ever could find Hillsdale Terrace, it was basically suffering from the way it was built in a kind of a gully, and we did have to face mold and living conditions that were not good.
It reminds me of a discussion we had years ago about former Columbia Villa when Commissioner Leonard, then a firefighter, talked about the challenges of how you got rigs into a community that was literally so isolated and so disconnected to the surrounding community. There was one entrance and one exit. Mm-hmm. And just the simple fact that we integrated the street grid and
right.
connected the new Columbia to that area was both a substantive and sort of a philosophical change of bringing public housing into the mainstream.
Absolutely. And this is challenging, a different type of challenge, but indeed we are going to connect better to the surrounding area. And actually, Rick and the Children's Center is going to front Capitol Highway. And we actually are able to have much better access for pedestrians as well as vehicles, I think, to connect to the surrounding neighborhood. But there will also be an increase in affordable housing opportunities for families. And the development will be very sustainable, as Commissioner Fish mentioned. You know, we will achieve significant improvements in terms of the green aspects. But also, it's a big opportunity for us. We work with partners too, including the city, of course, but Habitat for Humanity, who we work with many times, is going to build 7 home ownership opportunities very close by. The Hillsdale Community Church, which is right next to the property, actually has been a great neighbor. And we are working with them to actually provide a second community garden that will serve not just the residents of Stevens Creek Crossing, but also the surrounding community. And it's great. We've seen community gardens be very successful in our developments to provide healthy food, physical activities, and really be a great community building venture for people from different walks of life. And finally, our key partner is Neighborhood House, as you know, is a very highly respected social service provider for that, providing support for families for generations, particularly in the so-called hidden pockets of poverty in Southwest Portland. And there are a lot of people who have many needs in Southwest Portland. Neighborhood House is going to provide, I think, a state-of-the-art facility working with us and other partners for Head Start and other early childhood education programs, and we believe that this facility, which will be the gateway to our community, will also be, you know, a great symbol of hope for the next generation and move out of poverty as Stevens Creek Crossing comes to reality. So,
Steve, before we move on to Rick, 2 quick questions. Could you remind us what the value of the federal grant that you secured?
I think it was $18.5 million is the HOPE-6 grant and low-income housing tax credits, providing a significant piece of the budget, both 4% and 9%. Then we're putting some $8 million of our own equity into the development.
And secondly, Steve, we as a council are working on ways of strengthening our MWESB programs, trying to move beyond just creating opportunities for subcontractors, but looking for contractor opportunities. I think there's a good story here as well.
Yes, we share the city's commitment in terms of we call it target business or business equity, and have made clear what we call is a federal requirement called Section 3. But the idea is to reinvest in the community and provide opportunities for residents, for people that usually are shut out of the economic market. So we have strong goals both for contracting and for workforce. I think you know that we have an innovative partnership with RNH and Colas Construction being our general contractors on this project, and it's working out really well. Thank you.
Rick Nitti is Executive Director of Neighborhood House, and we know him for all the programs that he does now. He's also got some new ideas that he shared with us about new areas, particularly around addressing hunger in the community. And Rick, it's a pleasure to have you here today.
Oh, this was left over from that end
of our signs.
Did you want this back?
No,
I was showing it.
You can pin it up on the map,
okay,
right where Jackson may be.
Fish.
So, okay. Well, yes, I'm Executive Director of Neighborhood House. I'm a resident of Hillsdale.
Thank you.
I work in Multnomah Village, so I'm very tied to the community. Neighborhood House was established in 1905 to meet the needs of the increasing immigrant population that was settling into the South Portland area, just a few blocks down the road, I believe. Today, we're a $6 million organization with a staff of 94 regulars and an additional 50 or so instructors in our sun schools, and we use around 600 volunteers annually. We serve between 16,000 and 18,000 individuals each year with early childhood, youth development, senior services, and anti-poverty services. Our core service area runs along I-5 and west, so basically the west side and North Portland. Traditionally, we are a west side organization, but we've become one of the largest providers of social services up in North Portland. If you ask any Neighborhood House staff person what's special about Neighborhood House, it would be the passion for mission and the people that we serve. We also are expert at working in multicultural environments and have been recognized for our work by organizations in the Muslim and East African communities, as well as Multnomah County in the state of Oregon. We're a longtime supporter of the Hillsdale Terrace Hope 6 process. We have worked with families in Hillsdale Terrace since it got there. Our board has made a very strong commitment to affordable and low-income housing. We believe one of the best ways to alleviate the intense poverty that's growing in mid-county is by placing housing along throughout the community, throughout the city, to draw low-income people into other areas. And because of that, we worked very hard on the Sears Project, and we also worked very hard advocating with community members, educating our donors about the importance of Hillsdale Terrace's Hope 6 application. One of the other things I'd just like to highlight is that Neighborhood House is also the sun provider at Robert Gray Middle School. And the community is making this huge investment in creating Stevens Creek Crossing that will double or triple the amount of low-income kids that will be feeding into Hayhurst Elementary School and the Robert Gray Middle School. And I think it's important that the city continue its commitment to providing sun services at Robert Gray. In light of this development. Now that I'm done with my little editorializing, Nick, I won't have to say it later on in the month.
No, say it again.
Okay, I will. During the past few years, Neighborhood House, like most social service agencies in the community, have seen an incredible increase in the number of Southwest residents coming to Neighborhood House for help with emergency services, with including food and shelter and energy assistance. Southwest Portland is home, as Steve mentioned, to pockets of poverty that create a much greater diversity than most people realize. The importance of this project is, in my mind, is extreme. Providing affordable and low-income housing to those residents and other people in the community. We are excited to be partnering with Home Forward with Stevens Creek Crossing with the implementation of our very exciting opportunity to have a children's center right on Capitol Highway and serving as the gateway to Stevens Creek Crossing. It will no longer be isolated and hidden. It will be a vital, active entrance into the community, so people will be aware. We will provide...
Could you explain? Yeah. Oh, maybe you are. Yeah. What is in the children's...
We will be providing Head Start services and other early childhood services in the Children's Center. We are about to initiate a capital campaign to raise money to bring improvements to it, so our board has made a strong commitment to the project to help, create a state-of-the-art, high-quality setting to put our children into. One of the things I'm most excited about is the green aspect of the building, as well as the playground, which the architects have done an incredible job at designing. I mean, it is going to be incredible. As I've been meeting with our staff and telling them what they have to look forward to when this project is done. I mean, their eyes just light up. I mean, the design is beautiful. It utilizes Head Start recommendations and best practice for early childhood environments. And I think we will be putting forward one of the best early childhood